I'm Cassandra Earle. You are listening to News and Views at RadioRegent.com, and this is your weekly news roundup, beginning with international news. As different areas of the world have seen increases in the number of deaths from the coronavirus, other countries have started to slowly open up again. Reopening schools has been on the minds of parents, students, and education workers, as Denmark has taken the leap. Schools in Denmark reopen for students under the age of 12. Schoolyards have been sectioned off with tape, classroom sizes are smaller in order for desks to be placed 2 meters apart, and all surfaces, including sinks, toilet seats, and door handles, are disinfected twice daily. The Czech Republic has also started to allow for final year students at colleges and universities to return to school. Chile has started to issue digital immunity cards to people who have recovered from the coronavirus following the 14-day quarantine. UK Health Minister Matt Hancock said the UK was looking into a similar process with, quote, immunity certificates, unquote. Turkey has started to enforce weekend-only lockdowns, where for 48 hours residents are placed on a temporary lockdown. In Libya, members of the public are, quote, permitted to walk, unquote, between 7 a.m. and 12 p.m., and stores are also only open during those hours. These unique measures are different in every country, but could also provide insight into what the next steps might mean for Canada. Across the world, more than 2.5 million people have been diagnosed with the coronavirus, and more than 170,000 have died, according to Johns Hopkins University. About a quarter of those deaths, more than 45,000, are from the United States. The United States has had more than 825,000 confirmed cases in total. In New York, the governor, Andrew Cuomo, announced that he plans to double the state's testing capacity to close to 40,000 people a day, but did say this process could take weeks. President Donald Trump also announced that he would be placing a 60-day pause on immigration, although depending on how things process over the next few weeks, he said it could be extended to longer. President Trump said the immigration pause would only impact those looking to receive permanent residency, not those looking to come on a temporary basis. The Senate also approved a relief package earlier this week worth $484 billion to aid the economic fallout from the pandemic. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced Wednesday new measures to help students during the COVID-19 pandemic. The $9 billion included in the package is focused towards helping students by allotting $1,250 a month for post-secondary students that don't have jobs or make less than $1,000 per month. This new addition to funding also includes those who have a disability or are a caretaker, in which they would be eligible for $1,750 a month. Trudeau said this next step would require new legislation, and talks are underway about how to get the process moving quickly to implement the new bill. Trudeau also said new student jobs and grants are coming, with the federal government creating 76,000 new jobs for young people in areas of work that need extra assistance right now, and doubling the Canada Student Grants for eligible full-time students up to $6,000. This new initiative from the government comes after some students voiced concerns that they were not eligible for the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit due to the fact that many students haven't made $5,000 in the last year, which is a requirement for the benefit. Toronto's Medical Officer of Health said Monday that the city is believed to be inside the peak of the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Eileen Davila said Monday that data is showing the slowing down of pandemic activity, which she says is good news. She also said that there hasn't been, quote, dramatic surges, unquote, in hospitalizations, and that new instances where people are admitted to hospitals is beginning to decrease. Davila also said there's two types of COVID outbreaks, one that impacts the broader community and the other that impacts places like long-term homes. She said that community outbreaks can see more hospitalizations, whereas the type of outbreaks at care homes and similar facilities can see more deaths. Davila and Mayor John Tory both stressed on Monday for residents to stay vigilant and follow public health advice. My name's Cassandra Earle, and you're listening to Radio Regent at RadioRegent.com.
What's up, Radio Regent? It's Namma Weingarten, here for Politics Talk. Today, we're going to talk all about Trump's recent decision to cut funding from the World Health Organization. It's a move that triggered quite a lot of criticism, especially given the timing of the decision, since we still very much are in the middle of a global pandemic. So, before we start getting into this, let's talk a little bit about the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization, also known as the WHO, is a specialized agency of the United Nations responsible for international public health. They strive to combat the spread of disease around the world and employ thousands of dedicated healthcare workers in 194 different countries. The WHO has no direct authority over member nations, much like how the United Nations doesn't have authority over its countries. Popular criticism against the WHO is that even though it's a very influential organization, its mission for universal healthcare is often overshadowed by pressure from countries like China and the US and organizations like the Gates Foundation. They give the WHO a lot of their funding, so they have a lot of influence over it. Perhaps too much influence, but we'll talk more about that in a second. For now, let's go back to Trump cutting US funding from the WHO. The way funding for the World Health Organization works is through member dues, and by members, I mean countries. Member dues make up about a quarter of the money the United States gives the WHO. The rest comes from voluntary contributions, which can vary in size year to year. Those member dues are calculated relative to a nation's wealth and population. The United States is the largest contributor, making up 14.67% of the WHO's budget. According to the New York Times, in 2019, the U.S. contributed about $553 million to the WHO. The U.S. contribution to the WHO is nearly twice as the next largest contribution from a nation, which is the UK, which funds 7.79% of the WHO's budget. Meanwhile, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation pays for 9.76% of the budget. So, as you can imagine, the U.S. cutting its funding will have quite an impact on the organization. Most of the money from the US goes towards programs like polio eradication, developing vaccines, and increasing access to essential health and nutrition services. Just 2.97% of the US contribution goes towards emergency operations, and 2.33% is earmarked for outbreak prevention and control. When Trump announced he'll be cutting the organization's funding early last week, there was a lot of criticism. Tedros Adhanom, the director general of the WHO, said he regrets Trump's decision to halt funding. He said that the WHO will review the impact of the funding gap and will continue its work without fear or favor. Meanwhile, the United Nations Secretary General said that now is not the time to reduce resources for WHO operations, but a time to work together in solidarity to stop the spread of COVID-19. So, why did Trump cut funding from the World Health Organization? He said he did it because of their poor handling of the coronavirus pandemic. But earlier last week, the Wall Street Journal actually reported that it has to do with their hiring practices. Apparently, Trump's threat to withhold money from the WHO stems from an ongoing discussion inside the administration to link the $12 billion the US spends on international organizations to the number of American citizens hired by the groups. But, of course, in the forefront, Trump said that he's cutting funding because of how poorly the WHO handled the pandemic. And this is where many people actually agree with Trump and say that he has a point. You see, even though cutting money from the WHO can be detrimental, that doesn't mean they didn't fail to handle the COVID-19 outbreak. Remember before when I said that the WHO can be more influenced by countries like China than it is by its own mission statement? Well, this is where that comes to play. The WHO, in fact, did fail the world in a lot of ways when it comes to the way they managed this pandemic. If they would have reacted better, it might have not even been a pandemic at all. But let's start from the beginning. In July of 2017, China moved aggressively to elect the WHO's current leadership. And throughout this pandemic, it seems that the WHO stuck disturbingly close to China's official statements about the virus, including its transparent cover-ups. On January 14th, the WHO tweeted that, and I quote, "Preliminary investigations conducted by the Chinese authorities have found no clear evidence of human-to-human transmission of the novel coronavirus." That claim was false, and known by the authorities in Wuhan to be false. In fact, at that point, Taiwan already knew that the virus could be transferred via human contact and actually warned the WHO about it. However, the WHO still trusted China and tweeted otherwise. But this isn't the only misinformation they've promoted. The WHO continue to insist that masks are unnecessary despite accumulating evidence that they're essential to containing the spread of COVID-19. The WHO also consistently advised against travel restrictions and argued that they are ineffective and likely to cause economic harm. But a great way to assess just how deeply the WHO messed up is by looking at the places that didn't listen to it: Taiwan and Hong Kong. Both Taiwan and Hong Kong are actually the two places where COVID-19 was successfully contained, despite having dense populations and close links to and travel from China. Taiwan, with a population of almost 30 million people, had fewer than 400 confirmed cases since the beginning of the outbreak and only 6 deaths. Schools there have been open since the end of February, and there is no drastic lockdown there. Meanwhile, Hong Kong had just more than 1,000 cases and only 4 deaths, despite never completely closing its border with mainland China and despite a lot of the city functioning as usual. According to The Atlantic, Taiwan and Hong Kong succeeded because they ignored, contradicted, and defied the official position and advice of the WHO on many significant issues. Both Taiwan and Hong Kong knew the roles of the WHO and China in shaping the official statements about the virus. After all, this isn't the first time that this happened. China has quite a history of covering up pandemics. In 2003, the world didn't learn about SARS until after it escaped China and became impossible to deny. Back then, the WHO openly criticized China for its lack of transparency and cover-up. And one of the things the WHO is criticized for the most during the COVID-19 pandemic is for trusting China, given their past. The WHO took everything China said as fact, instead of sending their own investigators to Wuhan to really see what's going on in there. In fact, China actually refused to give them independent access to Wuhan, so the WHO had to rely on whatever information they gave them. The sheer fact that China didn't give the WHO access to investigate what's happening for themselves should have been a major wake-up call for the WHO and for the rest of the world. If the WHO told the world that China was not allowing independent investigations, countries likely would have paid closer attention to China and the outbreak. But instead, the WHO didn't tell the world and presented China's findings as facts instead. But you know who didn't trust China and decided to conduct their own investigations in Wuhan? Taiwan, the first country that tried warning the WHO about the possibility of human-to-human transmission. They sent their own medical teams to Wuhan in December, and those scientists confirmed human-to-human transmission. Taiwan isn't allowed to be a member of the WHO because of China's objections, of course, but it did still inform the WHO about their findings. Hong Kong health authorities also announced as early as January 4th that they suspected human-to-human transmission was already occurring. If the WHO listened to Taiwan and Hong Kong, we would have known about the possibility of human-to-human transmission during the first week of January. But instead, the WHO waited until January 22nd to confirm human-to-human transmission, when China finally did so. And by that point, the virus was already spreading all over the world. Take a moment and imagine we would have had the information to better prepare for the virus about 2 weeks ahead of time. Think of the cases that would have been prevented and the lives that could have been saved. It really, really is a shame. The reason why Taiwan and Hong Kong managed to get through the coronavirus successfully is because they didn't pay attention to the WHO's instructions. They implemented travel bans and encouraged their citizens to wear masks and socially distance themselves way before the WHO found it necessary. The Atlantic article titled "The WHO Shouldn't Be a Plaything for Great Powers" said it beautifully. A mission-driven WHO would have not repeatedly praised China for its transparency when it was anything but, nor would it have explicitly criticized travel bans when they were being imposed on China, but remained silent when China imposed them on other nations. Given that their leader was elected thanks to Chinese interests, the WHO seems to remember its principles only when they align with China's. So, now that we know that the WHO isn't exactly perfect, let's go back to the US cutting its funding from the organization. Although it is fair to say the WHO mishandled this pandemic, many also say that Trump cut their funding as a way to downplay how he, himself, also mishandled it. In other words, many say it looks like he's trying to shift the blame to the WHO instead of holding his own administration accountable for their slow pandemic response. Trump said that the WHO made a dangerous and costly decision to oppose travel restrictions from China at first, and that if the WHO had acted appropriately, he would have instituted a travel ban on people coming from China sooner. But during those times that Trump said the WHO should have been doubting China, he also praised China himself. On January 24th, Trump tweeted, and I quote, "China has been working very hard to contain the coronavirus. The United States greatly appreciates their efforts and transparency. It will all work out well." And then, on behalf of Americans, he thanked the Chinese president. And this is just 2 days after the WHO confirmed human-to-human transmission, 2.5 weeks late. But will the funding the WHO help improve anything? or would it just make things worse? First of all, when it comes to cutting funding out of the WHO, it's actually unclear whether Trump even has the authority to change policy in this way. But he's trying. But if he were to defund the WHO, they would lose about 15% of their budget. That's a lot. A lot more than the already thinly stretched organization can quickly recover from. And while the WHO may have let down many countries around the world, it's important to know that many countries, poor countries, also depend on it. Aside from handling pandemics, the WHO does a ton of important work when it comes to handling polio, Ebola, malaria, cancer, diabetes, mental health, and a bunch of other stuff. Just because the WHO mishandled this pandemic, it doesn't mean we should eradicate it. Instead, it means we should just change it for the better. And defunding it by 15% certainly won't help do that. Instead, we should acknowledge the corruption within the organization and take the necessary steps to make sure it's led with no political influence. I guess we'll see whether the US truly will defund the organization or whether it was just a rash threat. Whatever will happen, the World Health Organization will definitely never be the same after this pandemic, which put it in the international spotlight like never before. Alright guys, right now it is time to wrap up our politics talk, but thank you so much for tuning in, and I really hope this helped sort out some of the confusion around the World Health Organization and their involvement in this pandemic. And till next time, for Radio Regent, I'm Nama Weingarten.